Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And so today I'm reviewing a book called Dark Orbit by the author Carolyn Ives Gilman, who is an author I've not read before, and I can't remember where this book was recommended to me from or where I found it, but it made its way into my Audible wish list, and so I finally got to it. And it was published in, let me have a look here, 303 pages, about 11 hours of audiobook, published in 2015, and I only found out now, after looking up here on Goodreads, actually looking at properly in Goodreads, that it's part of a series. It's part of the 20 Planets series, but it doesn't have a number in it. I think it's kind of like a standalone novel. This is a book, although there seem to be a few things referenced in this book which I was like, ah, probably this is a character that's been, we've talked about before, or maybe this is a story that we've been filled in a bit with a short story before, something like that, and now I see that's part of a series. Yeah, that is a bit more clear. So I started this book just a few days ago. I finished it pretty quickly, mainly because I'm at sea at the moment on a cruise ship, and yesterday we set off, well, 2 days ago we set off from Lisbon, and yesterday the sea was very rough. And when a sea is very rough, it just makes me sleepy, so I pretty much lay in bed all day listening to an audiobook, which is not a bad way to spend a rough day at sea. So I started this off and while I was still at home, and I mentioned to Juliana, hey, it's really fun to read kind of a space opera book where you can't, the faster than light travel isn't possible, but you can stream particles, not stream particles, you can stream information from one place to another, and you know, you can scan someone in, they break them down molecule by molecule, scan them in, send them somewhere else and rebuild them. And I always kind of find this idea interesting in a way which it kind of breaks economics and breaks science and things like that. And Juliana said, well, how does it work in this world? And I said, actually, I don't know. It hasn't really got into the economics of it yet. So, and then it does, actually. It's quite a fun thing of people going on a, like a science mission, an exploring mission of a new planet. And when they get there, one of the main jobs, there's sort of like, okay, there's a science boss, there's the security boss and all that kind of stuff. But then on top of that, there is the public relations boss of the company which is funding this entire trip. And they're like, oh, we've got to find this discovery, or how do we frame this about how it's going to be good for humanity? And it's sort of like, okay, all you scientists, list all your discoveries so far and say how those discoveries are going to be important for the people back at home and how it's going to benefit their lives in any way. And so I'm quite pleased that there is a little bit of the kind of economics of, okay, sure, you're beaming your personalities from here across to one other ship miles and miles away, but who pays for all of this? And I quite like, and so who assures that is going to happen? And also I quite like the idea that it takes a certain kind of person to be okay to be streamed across, like, at the speed of light, and it takes them, you know, 56 years, I think, in this case, to get from one place to the other place. And then when they check back in at home, it's sort of like, okay, we have faster than light communication, but we couldn't stream it ourselves faster than light in this case. So I'm going to check back out. 56 years has passed. Is the people who were still in, who were in power when they sent me along to do this job, are they still in power, or does the company still exist? All those different questions that come up. So the way that this is set up is that humanity is spread throughout the 20 planets. That's the name of the series, and it's mentioned a few times. And what happens is that sometime in the past, a wave of ships was sent out. These kind of seed ships were sent out across the galaxy, and it's sort of like, oh, the near galaxy, and say, go out and discover these other planets. But they were kind of like a first wave of planetary exploration. And when they got there, often they get there, and the next wave of ships which went out, which were traveled even faster than that, you know, a much faster spaceship design, got there, settled the planet, and then these other ships turned up after that planet had already been settled. And it seems like there's different waves of colonization and different ways of technology. So some had faster ships, some had slower ships, some had the faster than light communication, others didn't. Some had devices where you could stream matter to them and rebuild people on the other end, and some of them didn't. All these different kind of things. So this spaceship has been like, has announced, hey, I've arrived at this new planet. and can't remember what the planet is called now, and is it here in the Goodreads blurb? No, doesn't say that. Anyway, so it turns up there, and they say, hey, this is a weird planet, and something that's weird. We didn't realize there were going to be planets here, because we thought this was a disrupted star with dark matter around it, and sort of like a weird gravity signature. So it's a planet with some weird dark matter gravity strings around it, and the scientists are there to find out about it. She's an exoethnologist, Sarah Callicott, and she is sent along for some different political reasons to keep an eye on someone and to keep an eye on things. But even though she's an exoethnologist, there isn't anybody on this planet to be an ethnologist about, so she's just sort of like sent along there as a backup to see the management of the company and things like that. It's just a cover story. But then it turns out they do discover some people on this planet, and adventures begin. So the story pretty much follows Sarah Callicott, and I really enjoyed this character because, again, when you start reading a book and you don't realize that maybe this has been a character in previous novels in the past, maybe, I'm not sure, but there's a kind of a well-roundedness about her. She comes from a planet where everyone is a bit cynical and undercuts authority, and I really quite like the cynicism and sarcasm of a main character. While all this kind of highfalutin science is going on, she's there like, you know, throwing barbs at the crowds and just going, this is a bit stupid. Well, whatever, I'm going to do my job. You do, oh, that's really stupid. Oh, you scientists. And I really enjoyed her take on the situation, especially that she is, she's trying to keep an eye on another main character, Thora, and because she's going to be in trouble for something that she's got up into the past. Again, maybe this is talked about in a previous book, but I didn't really suffer anything at all that this is kind of covering events that might have been discussed or shown in previous books. The only thing it did was kind of give a richness to these characters, which it's quite kind of interesting to just arrive in a story with fully formed characters from previous books, but not have to know their stories, or didn't even know that there were stories before this at all. I might go back and check some of those stories out, but hey, who knows if that's worth doing. So Thora is, it says, was once a member of the interplanetary elite, but since her prophetic delusions helped mobilize a revolt on Orem, she's been banished to the furthest reaches of space because of the risk that her very presence could revive unrest. And Thora gets lost on this planet and meets up with another character and a whole civilization which lives in the caves under the surface of this weird planet with strange gravity effects. The main character that we meet down there is called Moth. And again, Moth is some of the names and some of the ideas in this book feel a bit, as I often say, a bit on the nose. For example, there is a whole civilization which lives underneath the ground in a cave, and they're all blind. And they even mention at some point, oh, there's Plato's cave, although they don't call it the cave. They say Plato's thought experiment with shadows on the wall. And it's like, ah, so this is a book which is pretty much, let's play out the thought experiment of shadows on the wall in a cave and what it's like to be in a cave and never see light and only see things played out in the dimensions that you would see if you were, the dimension that you'd know if you were blind. So a massive part of this book is actually a really, really fun exploration of what it would be like to live in a society of humans with human thoughts and the way that humans perceive things, but just without being able to see anything, without the development of the visual cortex from when you're a child living in light, and a whole society and how it would play out and what it would look like. And when I say look like, what would it feel like? What would it be like? What would it smell like? And what would it seem like to someone who arrives without any light to be able to see what it's like? And that's what happens with Thora. And Thora meets Moth, and Moth is like a young, not a young girl, but sort of like a teenager, I guess, who is one of the explorers from this cave society. And she goes out exploring above ground and different parts of the planet and other places to find things to bring back and to trade and all that kind of stuff. Lots of people do that, but it's normally a job for the young men, but she is one of the young women who are doing that same job. and that her name is Moth, that she is drawn to the light or drawn to that kind of thing, plays out throughout this book where she has to try and learn how to see. And again, really fun exploration of sightedness and unsightedness and learning to see and what sight brings to people or what sight could bring to people who can't see. Anyway, really, really enjoyed all of that section with Moth and Thora, and then Moth with Sarah exploring what's going on there. What else do I have to say here? I'm going to look on my notes. This might be a very short episode because... economics. Oh, yeah. So what happens also in this thing is that you get these different characters and they discover more and more. And as we're looking at this, it's sort of like... There's lots of different ways of looking at science, and there's different factions of scientists within this exploration team, which is heading over to a spaceship which has arrived at this planet. And I can't remember off the top of my head all of the different kinds of ways of doing science or different approaches to doing science. But they all have different titles, and these ones are like, oh yes, we bring to the science what we want from it, and it confirms in us what we want from it. And other people are saying, oh no, we don't want to bring what we confirm, we just want to see what's there. And Thora is an apathist, so she comes in with apathy. She doesn't want to bring anything at all to it. She just wants to relax and let it wash over her and see what just turns up in her head, and she doesn't want to be influenced too much about it or too much by what she sees. She just wants to kind of get the revelations that approach her. So on the first mission to the planet, there's like one of each kind of these scientists of four different science factions goes down to the planet. And I really enjoy the idea of Thora being in... She practices apathy, and in doing so, she doesn't want to bring her own experiences in, and she just wants to let it wash over her. But of course she can't, because she's coming in as a human. And all of her training from beforehand about being apathetic and not bringing her own baggage and not trying to do any investigation and just seeing what comes up with undirected, not even research, but undirected observation, see what comes in, and her struggles with that, trying to remove herself as a human or her own human tendencies from this. And later on, when she does actually see this underground society with light, how much she just realizes, oh, actually, I brought all of this baggage with me, and I could never have discarded that. So that's one of the main things, I guess, that I really enjoyed about this book. I don't think there's anything that I particularly didn't enjoy about the book, although I don't think the story really holds together that well. Like I say, when you get so many ideas like this and throw them all at the wall, sometimes that really works out. However, if a lot of the story structure and story tension and all that other kind of stuff relies on so many different science fictional ideas, like you have to have this technology worked, but this kind of technology doesn't work, and faster than light travel doesn't work in this way, but faster than light communication does work with the Ansible ideas in this way, it kind of, all the time, I'm just like, well, how would that work? Oh, and there's dark matter over here, but it's not really explored very much. But then the dark orbit, well, is the dark orbit to do with the dark matter, or is it to do with the people who can't see and they live in the dark all the time? And then there's the spaceship that arrives, I don't want to give away too much about it, but I'm just sort of like, did that get its name before that happened to it, or did it get its name after that happened? Like, or was it named when they turned up, or why did they think about this going on like that? And then as we go through the book, there's a whole kind of mysticism kind of angle and kind of magic-y kind of angle, which again, I was like, okay, has this got something to do with the dark matter that they keep talking about? If so, that's not really explained. What are these other things which you're doing, and consciousness and mind-bending stuff here? And while I enjoyed all of it, and I kind of like the throwbackness of it, it's sort of like a almost a nostalgia novel. It's sort of like, hey, what we thought in the 1960s and 1970s, where you could have all this weird stuff going on and science fictional stuff going on here, and also just throw in sort of like, oh, spiritualism and magic and all that kind of stuff with a sheen of quantum something something something, and you can have all these fun explorations and have all these fun kind of magic-like experiences, based on consciousness exploring this and consciousness influencing this, and what they have here is a kind of thing called a beminding. I will bemind you and draw you to me, and all these different weird names and ideas coming on. These days, it feels like science fiction writers are a little bit more... a little bit more reticent to explore some of those ideas or just to introduce them into the novels, because you're like, oh no, this is science fiction. You can't get halfway through the book and it's suddenly not science fiction anymore. Suddenly it's all mysticism. Or it has to be kind of explained in a way which is sort of like, no, this is science fiction, but it's actually a fantasy novel. So I'm going to set it up as a fantasy novel, but then there's science fiction going on in the background. I don't know. It's just one of those fun mixes, again, that I don't really read so much in modern science fiction. However, while I enjoyed reading it, I don't think for me it was entirely satisfactory and didn't really hang together well enough as a story. But again, that's just me. I don't think there's anything wrong with the book, because this is what the book was. I mean, like, it was going for what it was going for, and it achieved that. It's just sort of like, maybe that just wasn't for me in the end. What else do I have to say about this book? I literally made no notes, and I think it's probably because... Oh, yeah, actually, the audiobook narrator, let me just quickly look up. It's narrated by Melanie Eubank, and I'm not sure if I've listened to a book by Melanie Eubank before. I don't know, but not the best reader. There's lots of times where she would just get to a word and kind of just then pause before the word in some weird ways, and to the point where normally I listen to an audiobook at 1x and sometimes at 1.25x, but in this case she kind of spoke so slowly in ways that I could get up to 1.5x speed and it was all fine. Otherwise, she did have a few problems with pronouncing some of the words, some of the more sciencey words or some of the more, you know, hard words or complicated words that I would think that as an audiobook narrator of a science fiction book, she would have got right. And there's some other things, some philosophical, I can't even say it myself, but then again, I'm not an audiobook narrator. So she at one point was talking about the Gnostics, and I'm like, I think it's pronounced Gnostics. It's like a G as in, like, the G is in, I don't know, What's another GN word? A GNU is a new, another GNU, a another Gnostic. I don't know. It's just a few things in those cases where I'm just like, yep, not, you didn't quite land that word correctly, but otherwise a pretty good audiobook. So, yeah, kind of talked about most of what I want to talk about. Oh, yes, maybe this is going to be a very short episode. Yep. Oh no, I did want to talk a little bit about the backstory of Thora. It says, oh yeah, she's causing insurrection, and I really enjoyed her flashback. So if there is a book which is that flashback, I think I'm going to now explore a little bit more and see which one of these 20 Planets books was that flashback, because it seems like the author here, her name being Carolyn Eves Gilman. It seems like she's written lots of books in these 20 Planets. Actually, let me just click on 20 Planets and see what comes up. See how many books are here and which are the characters in there. Oh yeah, Halfway Human, Arcfall, the Ice Owl, and Dark Orbit. So there's three previous books in this one. So maybe I'll check out Half Human. They're not numbered, so hopefully you can read them in any order. Let me have a look at Half Human. Is this one going to be... Like you said, these stories are set in the same universe, not directly connected. Yep, so actually it doesn't seem like... It seems like different character names here, so not the same character names. But again, really enjoyed this idea of a whole society where men and women are kind of separated out. And it's this weird kind of ritualized rape culture where the man has to set his sights on somebody and then the woman have to kind of become the kind of willing willing prey to their predator, but also kind of predators in the same way, predatory prey. Anyway, that kind of thing, as it was played out, just in the flashbacks, just the little glimpses, seems like an interesting way. And the way that the story plays out, not just among Thora and her backstory there, but among some other characters, one of who comes from that society, or his background is that society. Again, really enjoyed the ways that those stories played out too. So I think I'll see if I can find which book Thora's previous story is told in, if at all. Or otherwise, if it isn't, just to throw that kind of stuff in, just as a minor subplot backstory point of one of the main characters, is, I don't know, either masterful storytelling or intrigues me about a previous book that I'll probably go back and check out. Alright, I think that's about it. So I'm going to give this book, let's say 4 stars? No, 3.5? Well, I don't know, it's tricky because I really, really did enjoy it, but it didn't really all hang together, and I think 4 stars is a book which I would without reservation, recommend to anyone, even if it didn't land, even if it isn't the most amazing book. 4 stars is unreserved recommendation. I think this is a reserved recommendation, so let's say 3.5 stars, well above average, but still a few things which make me go, yeah, sure. So that was called Dark Orbit by Carolyn Eves Gilman. So that's it. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every single email, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. On Instagram, I'm at Luke Burridge there. On YouTube as well, at Luke Burridge there. And if you want to recommend a book to me, the best thing to do is become my friend on goodreads.com, and also go check out the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com. This is probably where I got this book recommended to me. If not, I do get to most of the recommendations that look even slightly interesting on the thread. Books I would like to see reviewed on the SFBRP listener group over on goodreads.com. And this is episode 349. The next episode is our special episode 350. When we get to the round numbers, we do a special episode. In this case, Juliana joins me to talk about something interesting, because we already recorded the episode a few days ago before I set off on this 2-week work trip, and it's scheduled for being posted in a few days' time. So check that out in your feed in a bit. Right, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.